I'm with Angela Manuel, the Editor-in-Chief of Clinical Medicine. He's going to discuss the highlights of the March 2020 edition of the journal. This is the first in the series of these audio summaries. So how would you like to start?
Well, let's start by saying thanks to you and thanks to all the listeners for what we hope will become a regular series to complement each edition of the journal as it comes out. The editorial piece that accompanies this edition of the March 2020 Clinical Medicine is entitled Think National, Act Local, and it encourages discussion around the role of the physician and the role of the Royal College in terms of influencing practice both at local and potentially wider levels. The discussion really begins with the fact that decision making in clinical medicine is a subtle art, and it's informed by one's own personal beliefs, one's educational training and background, the experiences one has had in terms during that period of training and apprenticeship, the local protocols and services available where we work, and probably also our gut feelings. But how that translates into influencing practice is quite important and highlighted by a couple of papers, at least in this month's edition. First one I'd like to point out is the one by Mitchell and colleagues from Liverpool, which highlights a common clinical scenario of interest to the general on-take physician, and that is of the patient with epilepsy who attends the emergency department. A recent analysis of the National Audit of Seizure Management in Hospitals indicated that about 1 in 5 patients with known epilepsy and 1 in 3 patients with previous epilepsy diagnoses underwent CT scanning, and this would suggest a possible overuse of neuroimaging in this population. But this audit was not a study at local level. Hospitals which participated provided information on a sequence of patients to illustrate process. And what the authors here have done is to present a population level analysis using commonly collected administrative data. And the intention was to see whether CT scanning rates following admission could be understood in terms of why it is we undertake these scans to inform future pathways and practice. And what they looked at was episode level data sets at over 4,000 admissions. So it's a big cohort here. And what they identified is that it's not necessarily the most suitable patients who get investigated. And the bottom line from all this is that they proposed that maybe one should develop integrated treatment plans to help patients limit attendance in the emergency department, and also make a call for better access to medical information so that patients aren't being seen without the benefit of a full data set. In other words, when admitting physicians have all the information, they're less likely to undertake unnecessary investigations.
So you said there were two papers illustrating this point about using commonly collected data to influence practice. Could you just introduce us to the second one?
Yes. So this is a paper by Sung and colleagues. And essentially they used the hospital episode statistics, the so-called HES data, and they discussed the question of frailty. Now, frailty is another topic of great relevance to general physicians, not least given the previous findings by the same group, in fact, that the majority of hospital admission patients have at least one of these frailty syndromes. The paper in this edition of Clinical Medicine is a retrospective observational study which tries to identify the predictive ability of routine coding of these frailty syndromes to predict length of stay and even mortality in over 65-year-old patients admitted to a London teaching hospital over a one-year period. So the first question is, what are these frailty syndromes? These most commonly are dementia, falls and fracture, problems with mobility, mood disturbance, pressure ulcers, continence problems. And the essence of the study was that they highlighted the importance of these frailty syndromes in predicting length of stay and mortality. And over 40% of admissions had at least one of these frailty syndromes. And the data set suggests that the presence of these syndromes was additional to the simple demographic factors in terms of predicting risk. And the model of such risks is presented in a way which is, I think, very compelling.
Thank you. So you seem to be focusing on topics which are of relevance to the general physician, and that certainly seems to cover a lot of the content of what is in clinical medicine these days. An article that caught my eye was the one about provision of NHS-based tobacco addiction services. Could you introduce that article to us?
Thank you. So yes, this very much dovetails with the RCP report entitled Hiding in Plain Sight, which was essentially around the provision of tobacco dependency services in the NHS. And that report laid out the call for a new model of care in terms of providing so-called opt-out services to treat this problem of tobacco dependence in our society. And this article that you highlight by Everson and colleagues from Manchester reports on the feasibility and the uptake of the first UK pilot study of such a service, which they've entitled the Conversation, Understand, Replace Experts and Evidence-Based Treatments, or in short, the CURE project. And it's actually based on a model from Canada on smoking cessation. And a key feature of the model is that clinicians in secondary care, in other words, the primary readership and authorship of clinical medicine, are at the front line of delivery of treatment, since that's where patients are presenting. And this is of special importance since the NHS 10-year plan commits to funding the treatment of tobacco addiction in hospitals. And this project, the CURE project, provides a potential framework for such a rollout of services at a national level. And really, I think this is a likely to be a highly read, highly cited and impactful paper at the end of the six months. And we look forward to publishing, hopefully, a longer-term outcome in ClinMed as well from the same authors.
So I know that the opinion pieces in the journal also provoke a good deal of feedback. What are the opinion topics in this edition?
Yes, thank you. There's a few. I guess the couple I'd like to comment on, or to invite readers to particularly comment on, is one on the training that we deliver on clinical examination, which is obviously a fundamental part of being a physician, especially in the context of the current age in terms of exposure of patients and whether chaperoning and is adequate and how that is dealt with in medical schools in terms of training in this sort of so-called Me Too age. That's quite an interesting, hopefully comment-provoking piece. Again, those of you who are readers of journals will also have this increasingly described, I would say maybe pseudo-condition of journal anxiety. And there's a really interesting opinion piece about this, which I hope will garner some thought.
So are there any other articles you'd like to draw our attention to?
Well, as ever, we, alongside the reviews, we also have our regular CME section, and this month is on renal medicine. And alongside the excellent reviews in that are the a really nice summary of the key recommendations from the NICE clinical guidance on chronic kidney disease in adults. And the manuscript focuses on recommendations most relevant to secondary care physicians. Obviously, chronic kidney disease is common and it's associated with significant morbidity, not least that of increasing the risk of cardiovascular disease. And obviously, all readers will recognize the importance of early recognition to minimize complications, including those of cardiovascular disease. The very, very nice summary provides a classification of chronic kidney disease according to the latest thinking, using the estimation of glomerular filtration rate, as well as the urine albumin to creatinine ratio. And it helps really towards moving towards identifying those who are at greatest risk of adverse outcomes, and then also touching upon the appropriate use of pharmacotherapy to minimise those outcomes.
And finally, I suppose it's impossible in March 2020 not to mention novel coronavirus disease. Any comment from the journal?
Yes, indeed. There is the ongoing outbreak within the UK and globally, of course. And the college and all its journals are really able to respond in nimble and urgent fashion with such an evolving outbreak. We are delighted to have a piece by actually one of our associate editors, Alex Lake, on the clinical manifestations of the emerging disease as we understand it now. and the priorities for the immediate future. This is a rapidly evolving clinical disease area, and of course it's important to maintain a look at the NHS and government sites for the emerging evidence, but journals have a place to keep readers abreast in terms of what's definitive and as a future item of historic record, which is also a key part of what we see the life of the journal as being. So thanks very much for conducting this interview with me, and I look forward to hearing the feedback of all the readers about what we featured this month. Thank you very much.